Exodus 28. Have Aaron your brother brought to you from among the Israelites, with his sons Nadab and Abihu, Eleazar and Ithamar, so that they may serve me as priests. Make sacred garments for your brother Aaron, to give him dignity and honor. Tell all the skilled men to whom I have given wisdom in such matters that they are to make garments for Aaron for his consecration, so that he may serve me as priest. These are the garments they are to make: a breastpiece, an ephod, a robe, a woven tunic, a turban, and a sash. They are to make these sacred garments for your brother Aaron and his sons, so that they may serve me as priests. Make them use gold and blue, purple and scarlet yarn, and fine linen. Make the ephod of gold and of blue, purple and scarlet yarn, and of finely twisted linen, the work of a skilled craftsman. It is to have two shoulder pieces attached to two of its corners, so that it can be fastened. Its skillfully woven waistband is to be like it, of one piece with the ephod, and made with gold and with blue, purple and scarlet yarn, and with finely twisted linen. Take two onyx stones and engrave on them the names of the sons of Israel in the order of their birth. Six names on one stone, and the remaining six on the other. Engrave the names of the sons of Israel on the two stones the way a gem cutter engraves a seal. Then mount the stones in gold filigree settings and fasten them on the shoulder pieces of the ephod as memorial stones for the sons of Israel. Aaron is to bear the names on his shoulders as a memorial before the Lord. Make gold filigree settings and two braided chains of pure gold like a rope, and attach the chains to the settings. Fashion a breastpiece for making decisions, the work of a skilled craftsman. Make it like the ephod, of gold and of blue, purple and scarlet yarn, and of finely twisted linen. It is to be square, a span long and a span wide, and folded double. Then mount four rows of precious stones on it. In the first row there shall be a ruby, a topaz, and a beryl. In the second row a turquoise, a sapphire, and an emerald. In the third row a jacinth, an agate, and an amethyst. And in the fourth row a chrysolite, an onyx, and a jasper. Mount them in gold filigree settings. There are to be 12 stones, one for each of the names of the sons of Israel, each engraved like a seal with the name of one of the 12 tribes. For the breastpiece, make braided chains of pure gold like a rope. Make two gold rings for it and fasten them to two corners of the breastpiece. Fasten the two gold chains to the rings at the corners of the breastpiece and the other ends of the chains to the two settings, attaching them to the shoulder pieces of the ephod at the front. Make two gold rings and attach them to the other two corners of the breastpiece on the inside edge next to the ephod. Make two more gold rings and attach them to the bottom of the shoulder pieces on the front of the ephod, close to the seam, just above the waistband of the ephod. The rings of the breastpiece are to be tied to the rings of the ephod with blue cord, connecting it to the waistband so that the breastpiece will not swing out from the ephod. Whenever Aaron enters the holy place, he will bear the names of the sons of Israel over his heart on the breastpiece of decision, as a continuing memorial before the Lord. Also, put the Urim and the Thummim in the breastpiece, so that may be over Aaron's heart whenever he enters the presence of the Lord. Thus, Aaron will always bear the means of making decisions for the Israelites over his heart before the Lord. Make the robe of the ephod entirely of blue cloth, with an opening for the head in its center. There shall be a woven edge like a collar around this opening, so that it will not tear. Make pomegranates of blue, purple, and scarlet yarn around the hem of the robe, with gold bells between them. The gold bells and the pomegranates are to alternate around the hem of the robe. Aaron must wear it when he ministers. The sound of the bells will be heard when he enters the holy place before the Lord and when he comes out, so that he will not die. Make a plate of pure gold and engrave on it, as on a seal, "Holy to the Lord." Fasten a blue cord to it to attach it to the turban. It is to be on the front of the turban. It will be on Aaron's forehead, and he will bear the guilt involved in the sacred gifts the Israelites consecrate, whatever their gifts may be. It will be on Aaron's forehead continually, so that they will be acceptable to the Lord. Weave the tunic of fine linen and make the turban of fine linen. The sash is to be the work of an embroiderer. Make tunics, sashes, and headbands for Aaron's sons to give them dignity and honor. After you put these clothes on your brother Aaron and his sons, anoint and ordain them. Consecrate them so they may serve me as priests. Make linen undergarments as a covering for the body, reaching from the waist to the thigh. Aaron and his sons must wear them whenever they enter the tent of meeting or approach the altar to minister in the holy place, so that they will not incur guilt and die. This is to be a lasting ordinance for Aaron and his descendants.
Well, apparently this saying goes, a lawyer who acts for himself has a fool for a client. Well, back in 2008, Heather Mills, who was married to Paul McCartney, decided to represent herself in court through their divorce proceedings in trying to get some sort of financial settlement out of the broken marriage. She went into the Royal Courts of Justice acting as her own representative. She faced Paul McCartney's high-priced expert legal team as his representatives for the proceedings. He was using a guy called Nicholas Mostyn, a highly experienced QC family lawyer who's dealt with a few celebrity marriage breakdowns. Apparently, representing yourself in court is getting quite popular today. It's certainly a less expensive option, granted. An independent lawyer commenting on the Heather and Paul divorce case said this: very few make a good job of representing themselves. The chief problem is the inability to phrase tight questions, or sometimes questions at all. What tends to happen is a series of speeches instead of questions. Now, apart from it being no surprise that a lawyer says it's a bad idea to represent yourself in court, he's got a little bit of a point, hasn't he? Because you've really got to know what you're doing, haven't you? Basically, he's saying that most people just don't know what they're doing. That they're just not suitable to represent themselves. That they're simply not qualified. And they get it wrong when they're in court. But Heather Mills, she decided to represent herself. Whereas Paul McCartney, well, he chose someone else to be his representative for him. Finding a lawyer to be your representative before a judge in court is one thing, but what about our standing before God, the judge of the whole world? Do we represent ourselves to God, or do we need to be represented by someone else? God's people in Exodus chapter 28, well, they needed a representative. We've seen how the tabernacle was laid out. Sorry, I haven't got any pictures this evening. We see that it meant that God was separated from his people by dwelling in the most holy place. The Israelites, well, they were only allowed into the courtyard. And between those two places, Within the tabernacle area, well, there was two curtains, one in front of the most holy place and one in front of the holy place, separating God from his people, even though he was going to live amongst them. And we see in Exodus 28 that the Israelites, that they couldn't represent themselves, that they needed a priest to represent them before God. That would bridge the gap that was created by that separation between them. But also to carry out various duties. Duties that would further enhance and deepen, duties that would bring a great blessing to the relationship that the Israelites had with God. And the role of a priest wasn't just any old role that needed filling, as if Moses was to kind of put up a job advert on the entrance to the courtyard or place a notice in the community information board saying something like, priests wanted for long hours, no experience necessary. Can't be afraid of blood and happy to work with people and animals. Every representative needs to be qualified. So what are the priest's qualifications? See, because Paul McCartney, well, he chose the best and the most expensive, which wouldn't surprise you, in the world of family lawyers. But what about the priest for the Israelites? Well, the priest's role was ordained by God. It is God who qualifies the priest for his role. And it was given specifically to Aaron and his family. Verse 1. Have Aaron, your brother, brought to you from among the Israelites with his sons Nadab and Abihu, Eleazar and Ithamar, so that they may serve me as priests. And it was a hugely important role. That's why chapter 28 and chapter 29 is all about them. But particularly chapter 28, what it is that they're going to wear. Because clothes in the ancient Near East represented what the person wearing them represented. It's kind of similar today in many areas of our society. For example, take a police officer. They wear a uniform, don't they? We all recognise, or I hope we do, what a police officer looks like. We see their clothes, their uniform. Maybe they show us their badge. And immediately we associate them with the power and the authority that they have and what it is that they represent. And so we also see the clothes that God describes in this chapter that the priests wore. They also qualified him for his duties. Because the priest's clothes were to be made in such a way as to highlight the importance of their God-given calling. Verse 2, make sacred garments for your brother Aaron to give him dignity and honour. The priest stood out within the community of God's people. They looked elegant. Their clothes were beautiful. They gave the priest dignity. You'd look at the priest and immediately think that they were important. The priest was the best dressed man in the whole of Israelite community. But even more than highlighting the priest's importance, the clothes pointed to a bigger reality. I've got a picture of roughly what the whole outfit looked like. If we could have that slide, please, Johnny. Thank you. There it is. Hopefully you can see the breast piece, obviously at the front, and the turban. And basically the rest of the outfit is the ephod that we're going to be looking at in this chapter. And that's described for us. Let's have a look at verses 3 to 5. Tell all the skilled men to whom I have given wisdom in such matters that they are to make garments for Aaron, for his consecration, so that he may serve me as a priest. These are the garments they are to make: a breastpiece, an ephod, a robe, a woven tunic, a turban, and a sash. They are to make these sacred garments for your brother Aaron and his sons, so that they may serve me as priests. Make them use gold and blue, purple and scarlet yarn and fine linen. All of these clothes, all of this material was to be used in the making of the priest's clothing. Just want to briefly have a look at each one, just very briefly. The ephod first, verses 6 to 8. Make the ephod of gold and of blue, purple and scarlet yarn and of finely twisted linen, the work of a skilled craftsman. It is to have two shoulder pieces attached to two of its corners so that it can be fastened. Its skillfully woven waistband is to be like it, of one piece with the ephod, made with gold and with blue, purple and scarlet yarn and finely twisted linen. The breastpiece, verse 15, fashion a breastpiece for making decisions, the work of a skilled craftsman. Make it like the ephod, of gold and of blue, purple and scarlet yarn and a finely twisted linen. The robe, down at verse 31, make the robe of the ephod entirely of blue cloth. Just jumping to verses 33 and 34. Make pomegranates of blue, purple, and scarlet yarn around the hem of the robe, with gold bells between them. The gold bells and the pomegranates are to alternate around the hem of the robe. And then the turban in verses 36, 37, make a plate of pure gold and engrave on it as a seal, holy to the Lord. Fasten a blue cord to it to attach it to the turban. It is to be on the front of the turban. And then finally, the tunic, just verses 39 and 40. Weave the tunic of fine linen and make the turban of fine linen. The sashes to be the work of an embroiderer. Make tunics, sashes, and headbands for Aaron's sons to give them dignity and honour. See, all of this description, it's basically all of the same stuff that's to be used in the making of the tabernacle. Let's just take gold. Well, there's plenty of that through chapter 26 in the tabernacle. Gold hooks for hanging the curtains, gold posts and gold crossbeams. All the way through chapter 25 as well. Gold lampstand in the holy place with a gold-covered table. The Ark of the Covenant that's in the most holy place, covered in gold. And then blue, purple and scarlet yarn and fine linen through chapter 26. All of these colours and the fine linen to be used in the making of the curtains. Those curtains that separate the most holy place from the holy place. Separate the holy place from the courtyard. And even what's used on the curtains for the courtyard entrance. And as we've seen, the tabernacle, if you were here last week, was a piece of heaven on earth. It was to be fit to receive the King of the universe. Fit to receive a holy God. And the clothes for the priest, well, they had to be of the same standard. Fit for the presence of God. Because the priest would enter into God's presence. We saw that at the end of chapter 27, verse 21. Please just have a look with me. Chapter 27, verse 21. In the tent of meeting, outside the curtain that is in front of the testimony, Aaron and his sons are to keep the lamps burning before the Lord from evening till morning. This is to be a lasting ordinance among the Israelites for the generations to come. So the priest had to be fit to enter into God's presence. It couldn't be any other way, could it? God is glorious, beautiful, and holy. The tabernacle had to have the same qualities. And so the priest also had to have the same. It was his clothes that signified these qualities. Glory, beauty, and holiness for the priests. The problem is that Aaron, his sons, and all those who followed them in taking the role of priest, didn't have any of these qualities in and of themselves. They too were sinners. They weren't holy. Even if we give them the benefit of the doubt and say that they'd have been kind of pretty handsome guys, they weren't glorious or beautiful to the same level as God. They weren't perfect priests. They had to make a sin offering for their own sin before they entered God's presence. And God's holiness in part means that he is separate from anything else in creation. Nothing can be compared to him. He is totally other, totally unique. But the Israelites in their relationship with God, they needed a priest to be their representative to God. And God provided that for the relationship with his people, starting with Aaron and his sons. And God has provided a much better priest for us in Jesus. Because he is a perfect priest. Hebrews chapter 4 verse 14 says this. We have a high priest who has gone through the heavens. Jesus, the Son of God. And we can't represent ourselves to God. Because of the sin that is in our hearts. Furthermore, we can't represent ourselves to God. Because from what we've just read in Exodus 28. The representative we need has to be like God. Has to be holy. Which Jesus is, that as well. Hebrews 1 verse 3. The Son, Jesus, is the radiance of God's glory and the exact representation of his being. God is holy. Jesus is holy. Jesus fully embodies what the priest's clothes signify in chapter 28. Because he is in himself glorious, beautiful, and holy. Just one more verse to point this out. Hebrews chapter 7, verse 26, speaking of Jesus. Such a high priest meets our need, one who is holy, blameless, pure, set apart from sinners, exalted above the heavens. Jesus is unique and holy, exactly like God, because he is God. Jesus is fully qualified to represent you and me to God. He is fully able to go into the presence of a glorious, beautiful, and holy God, because he too is holy, glorious, and beautiful. But is Jesus representing you to God? Because if he is, then he too enhances and deepens and brings great blessing to your relationship that you have with God. Jesus brings you into God's presence if he is your representative. Thanks, Johnny. Verses 9 to 14. Just have a look at those verses with me, please. Take two onyx stones and engrave on them the names of the sons of Israel in the order of their birth. Six names on one stone and the remaining six on the other. Engrave the names of the sons of Israel on the two stones the way a gem cutter engraves a seal. Then mount the stones in gold filigree settings and fasten them on the shoulder pieces of the ephod as memorial stones for the sons of Israel. Aaron is to bear the names on his shoulders as a memorial before the Lord. Make gold filigree settings and two braided chains of pure gold like a rope and attach the chains to the settings. The priest's outfit on the ephod included these two onyx stones with these names on them. Reuben, Simeon, Judah, Dan, Naphtali and Gad on the one. And on the other shoulder there was Asher, Issachar, Zebulun, Ephraim, Manasseh and Benjamin, completing the 12 tribes of Israel. Now apart from these verses confirming the representative role of the priest, the imagery being conveyed is that whenever the priest entered into the holy place, he literally took all of Israel in with him on his shoulders. These two stones were a fashion statement, if I can put it like that. They basically said, here we are, Lord, all 12 tribes of your treasured possession. The priest did that for Israel as their representative. The priest entered into the presence of God and symbolically took the Israelites in with him. And Jesus does that as a representative too. He enters into God's presence, takes those with him whom he represents. Isn't that a blessing? To be in the presence of God, to know in Jesus you're welcome and in and accepted by the King of the universe. We've looked at these verses before, but they just say it so clearly. Let me just read Hebrews chapter 10, verses 19 to 22. Since we have confidence to enter the most holy place by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way opened for us through the curtain, that is his body. And since we have a great high priest over the house of God, let us draw near to God with a sincere heart in full assurance of faith. Well, secondly, the priest also had a great responsibility to the Israelites. This responsibility was also a blessing for their relationship with God, because the priest had access to God's wisdom. That's what the breastpiece refers to. Just have a look at verses 16 to 21 with me, please. It is to be square, a span long and a span wide, and folded double. Then mount four rows of precious stones on it. In the first row there shall be a ruby, a topaz, and a beryl. In the second row a turquoise, a sapphire, and an emerald. The third row, a jacinth, an agate, and an amethyst. In the fourth row, a chrysolite, an onyx, and a jasper. Mount them in gold filigree settings. There are to be 12 stones, one for each of the names of the sons of Israel, each engraved like a seal with the name of one of the 12 tribes. Then we get some more detail for this breastpiece in verses 22 to 28. And then verses 29 and 30, well, it confirms the role of the priest as one who had access to God's wisdom, which is also something that Jesus does for those that he represents. It's worth noting now that there are now 12 stones on the breastpiece, as opposed to two stones on the shoulders of the ephod. That is significant, because it shows that God was concerned for each and every tribe within the Israelite nation. Not one of them could feel otherwise. See, if God knew their tribes one by one, which is what these stones on the breastpiece represented, then he knew the families within those tribes. And because he knew that, the Israelites could take great assurance that God knew them. And even more so because the breastpiece was worn over the priest's heart. It's mentioned three times in just these two verses of verses 29 and 30. The people were God's treasured possession. God had called them that back in Exodus chapter 19. They were close to the priest's heart. They were close to God's heart. And so are you, if Jesus represents you to God. But please note the priest's role, which was access to God's wisdom. That's seen in the Urim and the Thummim that are placed in the breastpiece, verses 29 and 30. Whenever Aaron enters the holy place, he will bear the names of the sons of Israel over his heart on the breastpiece of decision as a continuing memorial before the Lord. Also put the Urim and the Thummim in the breastpiece so that they may be over Aaron's heart whenever he enters the presence of the Lord. Thus Aaron will always bear the means of making decisions for the Israelites over his heart before the Lord. Now, in all honesty, we know very little about these two stones, even if that's what they were. Seems to be the popular opinion that I've read. We've got very other little information in the Bible about them. What we do know, just very basically and briefly, is that Urim and Thummim mean light and perfection. They were used by the priest to receive direct guidance from God for the nation as a whole. And in that way, the priest and the people, well, they were seeking God's wisdom for decisions on a national scale. They could have been something like precious stones, maybe like the ones that we've read that were used in the breastpiece. They might not have been, to be honest with you, but they seemed to be something like coloured dice. The priest would roll the stone, and depending on which colour of the stone was facing up, that was received as a decision from God. Now, I accept that that does sound a little bit strange to us. Is it basically fortune-telling? Just kind of rolling the dice and hoping for the right answer? And yes, it is difficult, but I think we must remember that in Exodus 28, we're still very early on in the unfolding of God's plan of salvation. And yes, sometimes God did choose this method to reveal his purposes directly to his people in this way. But it was always used to further the working out of his salvation plan and of his purposes for the world. What's key in this is that God's people, well, they were seeking God's wisdom on really big decisions for them as a whole nation. The Israelites were putting this proverb into action, Proverbs chapter 16, verse 33. The lot is cast into the lap, but its every decision is from the Lord. They believed that God's sovereignty was even over the rolling of this coloured dice. They were seeking God's wisdom. And the priest spoke to the people when they'd done that and received a decision from God. And knowing God's will for our lives is probably something that we'd all like to be able to know quicker than perhaps we do. Maybe you feel that God would still work in the same way for you today. But he doesn't. Partly because, you know, we're much further on in God's purposes for the world. We're also following the climax of God's salvation plan in the coming of Jesus to die on the cross and rise again. And because of that, we know that salvation from our sin is only in Jesus. We have all we need to know in order to know that in the Bible, God's word. Knowing the Bible is knowing Jesus. They go hand in hand. And we have all we need in the Bible to live life in a way that honours God. That the Holy Spirit takes God's word and applies it to our hearts. So we know how to obey God and be godly in any situation that we may have to face. But there's also prayer as well. That's a great privilege of talking to God, asking for his wisdom in order to make decisions. Patiently waiting for answers to those prayers. And humbly accepting the answer, even if it's not what we wanted, but treating the answer as God's wisdom to us. I read this that I found helpful, I hope you do too. When coming to making important decisions, we should ask God for the discernment to know what our gifts are, the contentment to want what he wants, and the compassion to give our lives for the sake of others. No, we don't have Urim and Thummim to roll, but we do have the Bible, which tells us all about Jesus. And the Holy Spirit that works in us. And prayer. Now, they may not be as quick in revealing God's wisdom as the Israelites had, but they're God's wisdom nevertheless for us. And actually, they're pretty direct as well. The Bible is God's spoken word written down. And God speaks through it by his Holy Spirit to us. I'd really encourage you to use those questions on that sheet that are at the back when going through Genesis as part of this RBT program. Because they generate a sense of expectation, don't they? You ask a question of the passage and you expect to get an answer. God will speak to you through his word. It's being ready for the answer. Now, I'm not saying that the Bible will give you an answer for every decision that you may have in life. I don't know, perhaps you're thinking through some really big things. Shall we have more children? Shall I accept that promotion? Or shall I take that job transfer? There isn't a verse in the Bible that will answer that specifically for you. But as you know more of what the Bible teaches about Jesus, you grow more in God's wisdom. And you feel more confident to be able to tackle those questions. Because God's wisdom kind of works itself out through all those little different decisions that need taking on board and thinking through in getting to that one big question. I don't know, take promotion as an example. I really don't know if you're facing that situation. If you are, I'm really sorry. Please don't feel paranoid. I'm not specifically speaking to you this evening. But God's wisdom in Jesus encourages you, and as it does I, to think of your spouse or your children if you've got them. To think of current working hours, commitments at church, perhaps even your financial situation and all of the other responsibilities that you may have or may not have. And the answers to all of those questions, why don't they feed into that big decision of whether or not to take the promotion? And God's wisdom guides and leads through all of those other little decisions in order to make that one decision. So maybe you feel it's right and you apply and so you pray and go through the whole process. But someone else is offered the job instead of you. But isn't that an answer to prayer? The job wasn't right for you. Your prayer was answered according to God's wisdom, even though you thought you should go for it. And isn't it a blessing to have access to wisdom from God, who is sovereign over everything and everyone? See, if Jesus is your representative, you have access to the wisest person in the universe, to the person who knows everything. James wrote this in his letter, verses 5 and 6 of chapter 1. If any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to him. But when he asks, he must believe and not doubt. Well, let's move on in these clothes. The priest had to wear a robe with pomegranates and bells around the hem. Verses 33 to 35. Make pomegranates of blue, purple, and scarlet yarn around the hem of the robe with gold bells between them. The gold bells and the pomegranates are to alternate around the hem of the robe. Aaron must wear it when he ministers. The sound of the bells will be heard when he enters the holy place before the Lord and when he comes out, so that he will not die. Well, that carries a pretty serious warning with it. We're not really sure why what the pomegranates represent or why they were sewn on. But the bells, they were put on out of a mark of respect for God. See, in the time of the Israelites, people just didn't barge in on a king. They were announced to the king before they entered into his presence. And so the bells played the same role for the priest, because they announced to God that the priest was coming into his presence, because they rang. And because they rang, they also indicated that the robe was being worn. And so the priest was also showing his obedience to God and coming into the holy place to serve him. The priest was also responsible for bearing the guilt of the people. We see that in the description of the turban, verses 36 to 38. Make a plate of pure gold and engrave on it as a seal, holy to the Lord. Fasten a blue cord to it to attach it to the turban. It is to be on the front of the turban. It will be on Aaron's forehead, and he will bear the guilt involved in the sacred gifts the Israelites consecrate, whatever their gifts may be. It will be on Aaron's forehead continually, so that they will be acceptable to the Lord. The priest bore his own guilt for sin, and he bore the guilt of the people for their sin, but could enter God's presence because of that pure gold plate fixed to the front of the turban with the inscription, "Holy to the Lord." The priest and the people had to make their regular burnt offerings and peace offerings to pay for their sin. Those offerings that made atonement, that made them and God one. But the priest's responsibilities also included bearing their sin and the people's sin before God. And we find that Jesus did exactly the same for us when he went to that cross in paying the price for our sin. Our sin leaves us guilty before God. We are guilty of rejecting him, guilty of turning from him, guilty of deliberately and willfully disobeying him. And all of that guilt shows that we deserve to be punished by him. And yet the great news is that Jesus took that guilt from us, and so took the punishment that we deserve by being nailed to a cross, fully paying the price for our sin. And furthermore, giving us his perfect obedience, so making us holy in God's sight. It's as if we were wearing a white t-shirt that's been kind of badly stained and muddied and marked and, you know, slightly ripped in places. There's a bit of tomato ketchup and down the side and a bit of dirt on the back and a bit of sweat on the armpits. It's nothing like a white t-shirt. And then Jesus comes to us wearing his clean, perfectly white t-shirt. And he swaps his for ours. Isn't that a great blessing? He takes our guilt away. We don't face any condemnation from God, any of his anger, because Jesus did instead. Paul wrote this remarkable verse in 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 21. God made him who had no sin to be sin for us, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. So is Jesus representing you to God? Because if he is, then you're trusting in him. That's what it means for Jesus to represent you before God. Your relationship is deepened. It's full of blessing as a result. Jesus brings you into God's presence. Jesus opens access to God's wisdom. Jesus takes away your guilt. But if Jesus isn't your representative before God, then you're not trusting in him. And so you're trusting in something else. But whatever it is, it isn't, as we said at the start, suitable to represent you. Whatever you're trusting in, it is just not qualified to be your representative. Only Jesus is. So can I encourage you, can I urge you to put your trust in him?